Mixed Metaphors, Evil Ronald McDonald's, Space Cow, and America's Sweetheart, Lily Sobieski. This week it's Death by Branded. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Netflix Martyrs. We are back from summer vacation, and I bring with you, as always, the rest of the crew. First, we have Dee.
Yay.
And we have Pam.
Hi.
And everyone's favorite, Rob.
Hello.
This week, we watched Branded.
You guys are way more enthusiastic about this than I am.
I've been drinking a lot of wine, so heads up. Just a warning for everyone else out there.
I'm really looking forward to preaching the evils of consumerism and advertising throughout this podcast, because this movie opened my eyes.
Is that what this movie's about?
This movie opened my eyes to a world that was always there, but we just couldn't see. And the stupid sheeple, the masses, are still buying into it. Still feeding into the machine.
I thought this movie was about contracting mad cow disease in rural Russia.
You know what? It's about a lot of things, guys.
This movie is clearly subject to interpretation.
Oh, it's subject to a lot of interpretation. But let's start, like we always do, with Five Across the Eyes, where we attempt to explain or review or summarize this film in five words or less.
Talking cows make shitty narrators.
That's a good one.
Nice.
Elizabethtown meets Cloverfield, but worse.
I looked at it as every marketing major's wet dream.
Yes.
You can be a marketing guru and become a nationwide celebrity.
Only in Russia, though.
Only in Russia.
Only in Russia. Yeah, the third world, apparently.
It's a start.
I guess, yeah.
Dreams come true in Soviet Russia. Or not Soviet Russia, I guess.
Yeah.
Mine is what I believe the movie truly is, and this may require some explanation, Mad Men meets Batman Begins.
Yeah.
I would like to hear how all those things happen. Also, I just want to say that I would like time on this podcast to read the first review that you will find on IMDb, which is pretty good. I mean, it's pretty terrible, but I feel like it's kind of perfect for the show.
Pam has trivia hour for the day.
Yeah!
Well, the first sign that I knew that this movie would be perfect for the podcast was when I saw that it starred Lily Sobieski. Has she ever been in anything that wasn't trash?
The Wicker Man?
I'm pretty sure that's like the definition of a trashy movie.
That was a wonderfully awful movie.
It was awful.
What movie?
Right.
Chris, Never Been Kissed is a classic of our generation. I don't know what you're talking about.
I didn't even know who she was until we got to this movie.
Sure.
Yeah, I am struggling to find the Lily Sobieski film off the top of my head.
She was in Public Enemies, which I did not know. I didn't even notice she was in that movie at all, but she was, I guess.
I saw that movie, and I couldn't tell you she was in that movie.
She was in
an Uwe Boll movie.
Oh, yeah, she was in the one with Jason Statham, right?
Yeah, and Matthew Lillard.
Oh, of course, Matthew Lillard.
I guess if she's tucked far in the background, like in a movie like Public Enemies, and it's very hard to remember and or think about, it's okay.
Well,
she was also in the Wicker Man remake, so, I mean, come on, guys.
And she's the star. She's the star of The Glass House.
Oh, that's right,
a movie
right,
which
yeah.
teaches you that those who live in glass houses should not invite Lily Sobieski in.
I'm also going to die in a car crash.
I remember hearing it. She was in Jungle to Jungle? Oh, wait. Wow, we might have to take back every bad thing we ever said. She was in Jungle to Jungle.
Finally, a good movie she was in.
I know.
Because Branded is not going to be one for her on the plus column, unfortunately. Even though I feel like the movie experimented with interesting ideas, but executed poorly. That's another five for you. Interesting ideas, but executed poorly.
I think that's
my biggest gripe with this whole movie, is that I liked the root. I liked the root thought, but it just goes to some places you know, cow sacrifice, hallucination, that I really did not expect I would be seeing after sitting through the movie for almost nearly an hour. That the right turn that this movie takes is pretty sharp.
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of tried to set us up for it by... The beginning was, like, vaguely ominous when it has, like, this little quotation come up saying, like, all of these visionaries saw things and heard things that other people couldn't, and all of them changed the world. So I was kind of like, is this a movie about hallucinations? I heard the name of the movie, and I was pretty sure. I was like, wait, that's the movie where all of the logos come to life, right? I kind of remember seeing a 10-second preview of this in a movie theater somewhere once upon a time, and was like, oh, maybe I'd see that. I was like, this doesn't seem like the way that a movie would start about, you know, logos coming to life. I just thought it was going to be some weird horror movie.
I would have thought a movie that was about logos coming to life wouldn't have a scene like that. Mm-hmm. But I would kind of expect it to have a scene with a cow.
Yeah. That would make sense.
Well, let's jump a CGI cow constellation that looks at the screen.
Let's jump right into the movie. The movie starts in the early 80s in Soviet Russia, and our main character, played by Ed Stoppard, who I have never heard of and probably will never hear of again, it's a little kid version of him, and he gets struck by lightning after seeing the stars align into a cow's head, which talks to him.
I don't think it actually says anything.
No, it doesn't. There's a voiceover. There's like a narration of what's happening and saying like, you know, saying like, oh, something is going to happen to this little boy. And that was kind of where I got the weird Elizabethtown vibe from it. Because from there, it kind of like moves into like him later on in life. And just he's, you know, much like in Elizabethtown, you know, a movie we will always come back to. I feel like we'll never get away from that movie. You know, you meet him later on in life, and he's working in an ad firm, and he's trying to climb his way up the social ladder, and he's about to make a faux pas somewhere. It just felt very reminiscent. He's like this hiply dressed, like, kind of good-looking, kind of messy young man, and he's our protagonist, and there's a weird voiceover behind him talking about how great he's going to be. And I was like, oh, fuck. Great. It's happening again. It's happening all over again.
Yeah, I mean, pretty early they set it up that he's a big shot in the field. I mean, I think, don't we start out and he's at some kind of like awards gala, you know, some highfalutin black tie event where there's awards being passed around. And it's like basically says very quickly, like, this guy's the man at whatever he's doing right now, well, which happens to be ads.
Except that Jeffrey Tambor plays his boss and he steals all the limelight. He is the Alec Baldwin to our dear friend Ed Stoppard's, what's his face, Orlando Bloom. In this movie.
Totally.
He's like, I'm going to take over here. And this is also when we meet Lily Sobieski in this movie for the first time as the... I guess she's not really the manic pixie dream girl of this movie, but she's definitely like the quirky, like the minute you see her, you're like, oh, you're going to be the love interest and you're going to be like the wild child rebel that he's not supposed to fall for, but he does.
She's the most generic, like, what's the platonic ideal of the generic love interest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's so vanilla.
She doesn't have a character.
She's not a manic pixie dream girl. She's just a girl.
No, no.
She's barely a character in this movie.
She's just the girl visiting from America to see her Uncle Bob, Jeffrey Tambor, that's his character. And, of course, the first thing he says to his employee, Misha / Ed Stoppard, is, you know, just make sure you don't sleep with her.
Hint, which, hint.
I mean.
Yeah, she's like, you know, she's bad news for some reason, that she's just wild and she does whatever she wants. She's impulsive and... shouldn't get mixed up with her. She just took a semester off of school. Like, we hear crazy things that she does through a brief phone conversation that Bob, Jeffrey Tambor, has with her from uncle to niece. And it just kind of really tell, don't show moment. And this movie tells. It's very talky at parts where it actually really did start to lose me. And I was trying to pay attention.
Yeah.
Let's not forget. I mean, if you came upon the... Helen Hunt reminiscent Lily Sobieski.
She looks exactly like Helen.
She really does.
She does look exactly like her, and she tries so hard to capture some of that charm from, like, Mad About You, Helen Hunt, and she just never can. And and you know, but let's not be too hard on him. If you ran into her and you were in Soviet Russia and she seemed like the best option at the time, maybe, well, not Soviet Russia, non-Soviet Russia, now consumerist Russia, maybe you'd hang out with her. I don't know.
Well, because there's not another woman in this movie except the woman who's cast to be a fatso. All I know about Russian women is they're like I just picture old women in babushkas. So
I just imagine Russian brides. Maybe that's just me. I just imagine like the girls who get shipped over to the U.S. to be like brides for wealthy men. Which, I mean,
in any case, Lily,
we kind of took a dark turn with this, didn't we?
It was all a matter of time.
I think we're glossing over like the weirdest, most important part of this entire movie, which is the narration.
I thought the what Rob was saying before, when he goes into like they're in some weird museum in Russia talking, it's like the communist museum, and he goes on and on about how Lenin was like the first. He invented marketing because of how he branded communism and made an entire country follow it. And it was like this weird path. And you're like, is this what the whole movie is going to be about? Or are we just going to be talking about like Russian history and dynamic of their market for this entire film? Because it feels like it's going to go on forever.
Oh, well, maybe.
Well, it's
meanwhile,
it's a movie that it's a movie that muddles its messages right from the start. Like they basically say, one of the world's most famous communists is the first capitalist. So already they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. And really quick, before we leave him behind, I just want to say, let's all raise our glasses to Jeffrey Tambor, our first twofer. Welcome back to the show,
you poor bastard.
Welcome back, Tambor.
Welcome back, Tambor.
We get this narration that lasts a really long time.
It's the entire movie.
Yeah, and we get a voiceover, and it just goes on and on about how great of a marketer he is and how he came up through the ranks, and it's completely uninteresting.
All done with a really, really bizarre framing style for all the scenes.
Literally.
Well, they have to let you know it was a flashback, and I think that was their very, like, maybe heavy-handed way of being like, oh, well, check out the framing. Like, it's in a very small frame. You're, like, watching the movie in a little box right now. It's just a memory.
Yeah, but did they not have the money to just put a sepia filter over everything?
We're lucky that they had any money.
Some bullshit editing.
They could have just had Lily Sobieski going, doo-loo, 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 doo-loo. Like, we're lucky that that's not what happened.
Yeah, then it gets into a really weird, pretty much all of this movie, like, it just seems like a stupid love story for a little while, and then it goes into, like, really weird places. Like, so then there's the old marketing guy. This part of the movie I wanted to say I understood, but I didn't. I mean, it was supposed to be like this. So it's on the other side of the world somewhere. They have the old marketing guru who basically invented, what, like McDonald's or something?
He's on a private island.
A nameless private Polynesian island.
It is literally just private Polynesian island. And they couldn't just bullshit a name for this island. No.
Right, and all of the fast food places of the world are like, we're not making money anymore, we need help. So he says that we're going to make fat the new fabulous. And it's like this really campy, I guess that's too, that was a muddled part of this movie, is it went between like, hey, we have a message we're trying to get to you, but we're also going to be really campy and exaggerated at points, and then kind of try to take ourselves seriously at other points. And I just didn't know where it was going, I guess.
What bizarre universe do we not objectify, like not obsess with people being thin and still have a huge fast food problem?
Yeah.
Like, obesity is kind of an issue, but then so is body image issues. It's, you know, this movie assumes that it has to be one or the other.
Well, this is where I thought the movie was going for a while, that it was taking a very anti-American stance, like, look, this is the Americanization of Russia. Everyone's becoming fat and stupid. And I do think that was one of the more obvious themes of the film overall. But again, it didn't do anything with it. It drops it for CGI Ronald McDonald's fairly quickly. Like we said, it has a lot of messages. It has a lot of things it wants to say, and it doesn't say any of them very well.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But let's talk very briefly about Max von Sydow's role, where he probably came in for one day.
For a weekend.
Filmed this stuff. There was just him, the director, like four or five other extras and craft services, and he knocked it out in about 4 hours, collected his paycheck. Yeah, he lives on – he's the mustache-twirling bad guy who lives on Private Polynesian Island, which is apparently mm-hmm. the name of the island.
I mean, he's basically like the hired gun on the highest level of marketing.
Yeah.
And like I felt when I saw him that his character was meant to kind of represent what Misha could become with more experience and success under his belt. Like, this dude is even slicker than they present, you know, Jeffrey Tambor and his agency being. He has obviously his own private island, and he's meeting with these people, and it looks like they're bringing him in because, the fast food is losing money. And he'll basically, it seemed to me that maybe he is also someone who, like, sees these crazy things, or, like, his mental, like, you know, this movie makes marketing seem like a superpower. So let's say he's another superhero of marketing, just like our main character, Misha. So they kind of like bring him in to say, this is, you know, if you embrace the dark side, this, you could become this emperor of marketing and live on your own private Polynesian island. And Chris, I think you had mentioned this earlier too. He's not really necessary to the movie. He never even comes across, like, our protagonist, our main protagonist, never goes to the Polynesian island. They never meet each other. They never even speak on the phone. It's just he exists out here in his own little sphere. Our guy exists in his own little sphere. But they are battling.
I totally agree with you on the fact that they do. They make marketing, like, to be a marketing guru, seem like a superpower. Like, because in the beginning of the movie, they have Misha get hit by hit by lightning, and they say, you're going to lead a really interesting life.
That's a superhero origin story for all.
Yeah, I agree. I also liked this scene and the one fact that they have all these people sitting around a table, and you're just supposed to imagine that these are all of, like, the heads of each corporation. Like, this is Miss McDonald's sitting across from Mr. Taco Bell, and they're going to figure out a way to, like, take down everything and make fat awesome.
I wish they had name tags that was like Mr. Taco Shell or like Mrs. Wednesdays.
The weird thing about it, though, is that as much as it's like this group of executives sitting around a table trying to make fast food profitable again, I mean, not to jump ahead too much in the movie, but like just a quick like little jump to the near the end, we find out later in Russia there's only one really big fast food conglomerate. It's like basically a fast food monopoly that's all over Russia, and that's the thing. So he's not really helping all the fast food executives in Russia. He's helping whoever is the running that one specifically.
Yeah, whoever hires him. I mean, like I said, he's like the hired gun bringing in for the money, and it's the long play that we see kind of take place. Because we see very early that, like, Finn is in. Like, everyone's trying to be healthy, and the show that Lily is working on is not too far off from, like, shows that we actually have. These plastic surgery beauty pageants, so to speak. These ugly duckling-type shows where women compete to be made over in the most extreme sense. And they wanted to have, like, a Russian version of that. So I thought that whole concept was pretty dead on.
They did have that show, didn't they? Wasn't it called, like,
The Swan?
Yeah, it was called The Swan, right.
Yeah.
And it came out in 2004, and that's probably exactly what they were making over. They were making fun of.
If I remember correctly, they ended up having to cancel the show for the same exact reason. Because they were doing cosmetic surgery stuff, and they just botched it horribly.
Well, yeah,
let's see.
Let me explain the Max von Sydow's brilliant idea to make fat fabulous. Is a series of ridiculous, like, contrivances and coincidences that just all fall in his favor. And now this is a thing that the movie does a lot, is that they assume that the public are basically ADD 5-year-olds, because they jump and swarm and riot over the littlest things, where in real life, if this was America, they would just be, oh, that's pretty sad. Let me read about this in my People magazine.
Yeah.
Well, I ask a question then? I thought that the show was being thought up and financed by Lily, because she had to hook up to try to be the producer a co-producer on that show.
She was.
Her character was talking to Mishka, and he was like, "Why aren't you the regular producer?" And she's like, "Well, I need $750,000." And then they get a relationship going, and I was under the assumption he gave her that money so that she can produce the show. So wasn't
no,
it her show?
They did it together because she said, "I want you to work on this with me. I want you to be part of this." So they worked on it together. He was with her every step of the way, and then the night before the surgery, she's crying into the video camera. She's saying, "I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it." And they won't let her, like, they won't let her not do it. They make her go into it, but even though it's Lily's show, apparently there's somebody else behind the scenes who manages to, we didn't get into that yet, I guess. Walworth was known as that the chick goes into a coma, and yeah, the public is in an uproar. I mean, I think in America, you'd still have people who raised a fuss over it, who were like, "Oh my God, like, this is what we've come to. We are disgusting. Like, look at what we've done to this girl." But yeah, it would not be to the level that it was. It, like, all of Russia apparently banded in arms together.
Yeah,
it was fuck you.
You would have a writing campaign.
You wouldn't know. Sorry.
You would have a writing campaign to the network. You would have people upset on the internet. But you wouldn't have the Arab fucking spring like they apparently have in this movie. Because there are protesters who attack him. They go to jail. What?
Well, but not only that. You wouldn't even know who was responsible for the show. I mean, how many shows have been out that you actually know who any of the producers were that you weren't major fans of? I can't think of anything. Like, yeah, okay, so you've got like a few major shows like CSI and stuff where they are very prominent about who's, you know, backing the show, but like, I don't know who any of these reality shows are made by.
That's, again, him being a marketing superhero has made him a nationwide celebrity.
Well,
you never see that though. Like, and that would just be one quick scene of like, oh, he's riding high on his success and the people love him.
Like this might also be a cultural difference, guys. We might just not know how it is in Russia. We might just be thinking on American standards. I mean, maybe Russia is a very close knit community where everyone really cares about these things.
Russians hate comas so much. Like, comas is like one of their biggest pet peeves. So they have to like band together as a country when somebody goes into a coma, I think.
You were saying we don't know anybody. I mean, I guess to really break it down for people listening into how big of a riot, how big of a deal this is in this movie. Imagine that a contestant on American Idol, during the peak of American Idol, not like now American Idol, ends up becoming very ill because of stress. And thousands of people swarmed Simon Cowell's house and dragged him out and beat him senseless. And then he was arrested. Like, in no way, in no universe is that anything but a stupid way to get from plot point B to C.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to defend this movie again, but I do think they try to get you ready for that because our evil mustache twirling villain leaks the video of the girl saying she doesn't want to do it anymore. Like, he leaks that to the press. So I think it was more than just she ends up in a coma. It was that she was forced to do that surgery by the people who made the show.
No, and I agree. But I think this also, so this whole area of the movie, by the way, to everyone listening, I know it sounds like we went through this really fast and this is only like, I don't know, a 20-second montage at the beginning of the movie. No, this is like a solid hour and a half of the movie that you're going to maybe sit through. I would not recommend it. But
okay, we're in at this point.
This movie is also about an hour and a half longer than it needs.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's so much narration about the history of marketing. It takes up easily 25 minutes.
There's so much stuff about his own personal life that you don't give a damn about.
So
what I was going to say is that there's so much of kind of like, I mean, he's supposed to be your protagonist in this movie, but like a lot of what happens in the beginning of the movie, you're kind of like, you're kind of an asshole. Like, I mean, granted, he's an ad executive, so of course he's going to be a little bit of an asshole. No offense to ad executives out there. Lily Sobieski looks at him and she says, what's she saying? Because she apparently does not speak very good Russian. And he says, oh, she's just a little nervous. He doesn't say like, oh, she wants to get out of it. She wants to not be here anymore. He goes, oh, she's fine. She's just a little nervous. And then he's talking with Jeffrey Tambor in the bar and how he realized what marketing could do, like how he could fuck up people's lives with it. He was basically like, yeah, I got some guy killed because I made up or like I marketed him in a certain way and then I got him murdered.
Yeah, it helps that magic is marketing is magic in this universe.
Yeah. He got his first employer killed because of it. It's like this weird side story that just makes you kind of think he's an even bigger douchebag. And then, so he's in a bar with Jeffrey Tambor, and he's basically saying, like, I know what happened. I know that that coma was a product of, like, somebody doing something. I think you screwed me over because I slept with your niece. Like, I think this is all your fault. And then Jeffrey Tambor starts to have a heart attack in the bar, and he just gets up and walks out and is like, I don't know this guy. I was like, wow, you're kind of an asshole.
Just nobody realized that this guy literally has a job working for the other guy when the cops show up. He just goes off of, you know, he can tell them, no, I don't know this guy. I've never met him before. I just so happened to spend an hour drinking with him at the bar. And they just let him go. That's it. Is that how, like, is that really how the cops work? I don't know. I don't think so.
Maybe. They were like, oh, this is the ad executive. We better let him. I actually wanted to bring up two quick things at the point that when Pam was talking about made me think real quick. That now that we're at the hour mark of the movie, I don't know if anyone else would agree with me, but this was around this time where I started to find the narration device and the whole narrator voice super obnoxious.
Awful.
Super obnoxious. Awful. I can only take it for about an hour because at this point in time where the narration has gone through his entire past history and is caught up to his present day meeting with Jeffrey Tambor, it's so like fairy tale, whimsical, like, he realized the power of marketing could be used for evil. Like, it did not match the tone of the movie whatsoever to have this, like, whimsically fairy tale, like, sing-song sort of narrator.
The framing device reminded me the most, and this movie, tonally, is supposed to be very serious. It does not ever have its tongue in cheek. It takes itself very seriously. But the framing device had the exact same tone as the movie Amelie, where it cuts back to these whimsical moments throughout her life, often in this old style, like hazy kind of coloring. And every time it cuts back, it feels like you're getting ready for a comedy scene. And sometimes it is like very darkly comic, but it does not fit in with the rest of the movie at all, except to pad it out to get to the hour 30 minute mark.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I guess the second point I wanted to touch on is I think that this is another when Pam's talking about this meeting at the bar with Bob, this is another, I think, a very interesting idea that the movie just lets drop. It was like, oh, you imagine a bunch of guys in a basement passing a joint saying, wouldn't it be crazy if, and then other guys are like, yeah, man, that would be crazy. And then the dude writes it down and then it turns out he's a screenwriter and has to jam it in a screenplay. Like, this is very often I was imagining that scenario, and here's one of them, because basically Mishka's assignment, you know, working with Jeffrey Tambor's ad agency is that he's supposed to record, you know, he's using our main character as a spy, but then at the bar he says, I'm not a spy. What does he say? I'm a historian, something along that line. He goes, I have the stories for you, but I made them all up. I think that was very important. He says, and he's been working with him for however many years. I made up all these stories, which includes, like Pam was saying, made up a story about his old employer that he hated, like being involved in drugs and shit. So the mob came and burned him alive because they were like, how could you be involved in this? And why did they think he was involved in it? Because it was printed in the newspaper of Russia, like in the Russian newspaper.
No, it wasn't even printed in the Russian newspaper. It was printed in the New York Times.
In the okay, that's right. The world newspaper. So even worse. Yeah. Right? So he's making up stories that are being fed through the mainstream media and delivered as fact. And they all came to his head like a novel. They all came to his head as fiction. And, you know, it shows him writing these things. And I thought that was way more interesting than the whole, like, I can see brands floating around angle that the movie went into right after Jeffrey Tambor's death.
There's also another, but that's another weird part of this movie, though, is that they, like, for some reason, the New York Times gives a shit about this little dinky, like, stand somewhere in Russia that might be selling drugs, which this is another super unrealistic, like, why would anyone in New York care about this? It would never affect them. This would not be a cover story. This would be somewhere far back in the newspaper that no one in Russia would ever think to read, because how many, I don't know. I thought that was a kind of weird thread of the movie, too.
Pam, the entire Russian mafia reads the New York Times cover to cover. They do the crossword in pen, okay? Jeffrey Tambor dies very unceremoniously. He's gone. And then the movie now rushes through what probably could be an entire movie's worth of plot in about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He decides to flee. He leaves his important job behind, and he moves into rural Russia, withdraws from society, and then we get a 6 years later, subtitle.
We pick up with Lily Sobieski driving around looking for him, and apparently having spent like a considerable amount of time searching for this one random guy who has disappeared into the Russian countryside. And we come into focus when she's just come upon him, basically acting as a cowboy out in the middle of the Russian countryside. And, you know, they have their little talk. She tries to convince him to come back and figure out why he disappeared and, you know, figure out what's going on. There's a hilarious light a match scene when she tries to use the outhouse at his little hovel. And then, you know, they have an argument, I think, and she just takes off. Again, we're speeding through this because it only takes place over the course of like 10 minutes. He gets this vision as he's sleeping of what he has to do to make it all right. Spends the next day preparing, building a giant, you know, Wicker Man-esque structure, leading a red cow onto it, and just going to town on it. And this is where I was kind of wondering if our main character had kind of just lost his mind. And this was about to turn into, like, low-budget slasher flick all of a sudden.
Well, if you were living in the rural Russian countryside for 6 years with cows as your only friends, you might lose it, too.
Yeah, you have to wonder what Lila Sobieski was thinking when she came to pick him up afterwards, because she drag his unconscious ass into the car and drive him all the way back to Moscow. It's not the first time she's seen a Wicker Man, so.
We're talking about afterwards, but I think we need to get into a little more detail maybe on what he was actually doing, because this was the part in the movie for me where it took a hard turn, and just the fact that he comes across Lily Sobieski, or rather Lily Sobieski comes across him in the middle of nowhere carrying cows across the street is just another one of those plot things where it's like, we need these people to meet again, but her uncle's already dead. How would she come back and meet him? Oh, she's looking for him, and she finds him crossing the road.
That was the thing, is that she couldn't see him until Bob was dead, because one of the stipulations of Bob getting him out of prison was that she never saw him again, and she went back to the U.S. And that was why she left. Because she just took off without saying anything. She was like, oh, I don't want you to sleep with my niece anymore. Because he sees him having sex in the car, which, can we just talk about for a second that awkward sex scene? Which
no.
Was
really. No, we can't. God. It was so stupid. I mean,
and
I guess.
So contrived, too. Of all the. Well, Chris, this is the joke you made. Of all the street corners to be driving past.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I mean.
Of all the cars to get stuck next to in Russian traffic, it had to be her uncle.
That was actually the part of the movie that made me laugh. I actually had a very good laugh at that old scene when they roll down the window to air out their like little sexcapade, and Jeffrey Tambor is literally the car right next to them, and he gets that car and starts like pounding on the window. That was actually good for genuine comedy, as far as I was concerned.
Wait! You guys have never had sex in the driver's seat in bumper to bumper traffic?
Just to show you how bad the traffic in Russia is, man. It's like so New York City. It's so American.
I just thought it was awkward. Thanks a lot, McDonald's. Watching Lily Sobieski prop herself up on him, like awkwardly try to fit her gangly body on top of him in the driver's seat was.
Ooh. The best part of that scene was Jeffrey Tambor cold cocking Ed Stoppard in the face. He's got a meat.
That's pretty good too.
The least sexy sex scene I think I've seen since Irreversible. Maybe A History of Violence.
Asshole.
I'm completely not joking.
Watch Irreversible, and then you'll get that joke.
There was nothing attractive about. Okay, I'll revise. Since A History of Violence, it was the least sexy, semi-consensual sex scene I have ever seen.
Semi-consensual. That was nice.
It was a little weird. if we're going back to the countryside here, so after, you know, after they have awkward car in traffic sex, they're linked forever. She loves him now. She tells him that, but he can't hear her because Russian phone service is pretty bad, I guess. So the call is all staticky. You can't hear her say how much that she loves him. So when she finds him on the farm, he is been influenced by his dreams to draw. And you never, if someone's drawing something very seriously, they're never not crazy if it's in a movie, right? If someone's drawing something real hard, they're always going to be fucking crazy, hands down. And then it's the same with our man. He's drawing basically a funeral pyre, and he builds it, waves goodbye to Lili after she bugs out that he's had some crazy cow dreams. And when the sun goes down, one cow turns red, and he decides to bring that cow, this red cow, mind you, like horse of a different color in Wizard of Oz red, not like subtle red, like it's red. He decides to bring this thing up into his contraption, very gently coaxes the cow up there, and then he proceeds to hack its head from its shoulders with a metal shiny axe. And it takes him, what, maybe 3 or 4 good hits? 30 minutes ago, I was talking about the birth of marketing with Lenin in Soviet Russia. It's like, oh, he's sacrificing a cow now. Okay.
The moment that I knew that this movie was completely off the rails, batshit insane, was absolutely right there. It's the only cold-blooded murder of a cow I think I can think of in a film other than Battlefield Earth.
Napoleon Dynamite, I think that guy shoots the cow in the head while the kids are on the school bus. For some reason, that comes to mind.
Well, guys, ask me how this movie relates to Batman Begins now.
Yeah, what's the collection?
Okay, so the movie starts with a tragedy, the death of someone very close to him, the death of a mentor, this person who is deemed to be special. He decides, after this tragedy, to flee to a very secluded place, wherein he has this spiritual awakening. There's a fire. He becomes special. He returns to his hometown with this power, uses it, becomes the head of a very important corporation, then uses this position to save the world.
Okay.
That's actually pretty well.
It is the plotting of Batman Begins.
Nice, man. Very nice. Yes.
That's all I could think of while I was watching it. Is like, he comes back as marketing Batman, or marketing Bruce Wayne, really. Because he comes back.
So who gets to play the Joker in the sequel that will never be made for this movie?
Hopefully one of those big things that stays on people's back will be.
Yeah, it was that floating Ronald McDonald head was basically.
Yeah.
You know, and actually, you know, we're going to get to it, but Max von Sydow, our main character doesn't have to kill him, but he's definitely not doing anything to save him either.
Oh, Max von Sydow is absolutely Ra's al Ghul.
Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, actually, totally.
So as I was saying, he does come back to town, not by his own will. Lili Sobieski just kind of drags his unconscious body into his car.
Somehow.
Brings him back to Moscow. Because
she comes back for some reason. After like his weird cow story, she's like, you're crazy. I'm going to leave. And then when she gets back, he's even crazier than ever. And she kidnaps him.
It takes a little while for his full craziness to be revealed. Because
it's only because she brings him back to where? Soviet
Russia. Moscow.
Not Soviet, but, you know, consumers Russia. I can't help but think that if he had just stayed on the farm after that whole pig blood ashes experience, he might have been just fine. There's no ads on a farm in the middle of the plains.
But then Russia wouldn't have been okay, Rob. You're missing the whole point of this movie. Also, I like how it shows how much we know about Russia, that every time we have said Russia so far in this podcast, we've said Soviet Russia and then had to correct ourselves.
It's kind of prejudice. I'm sorry. I know you guys aren't Soviets anymore. I just, you know, it's... It's just like a reflex, you know. I like Rocky, and I play GoldenEye. It's a reflex. Soviet Russia.
Well, if we all wind up dead of ricin poisoning, then you can know to blame that one on Putin. Because he's listening right now. We know that important people listen to this podcast.
Now, only the
all the Russians.
Anyways,
all the Russians are going to take us out into the streets and beat us pretty mercilessly. For
I really underestimated our Russian fan base on this one. I'd like to formally apologize to all of our Russian fans for our depiction of your Soviet country. I apologize.
Lenin was the first original marketer. We understand this. We accept you guys as the the reason we have all of what we do.
Marketing masters. That's what I took away. That's what I learned from Branded. It was educational.
Now the full they liveness of this movie that we were promised.
Yeah, because there's still another 48 minutes after this.
Wait,
point.
Can we talk
this
about?
Could have been saved by a wrestling scene with Keith David.
It could have been saved by the end screen because I thought this was the first end of the movie.
I thought this was over now, but no. There's in the very unsettled way that Lily Sobieski is like, oh hey, so you're awake now. You're in Moscow. Go figure. I took you here, and you see this really overweight child. This is yours. Welcome to Moscow.
Yep.
I was like, wow,
surprise.
That was a lot of information to throw on a person in about 10 minutes. Like, oh, hey,
I managed to raise a horrible child while you were away.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's
the last 6 years have been hell for me. He's a little bastard. Now he's all yours.
They never explain either how her son is like this really chubby, like, I want burgers all the time. And she's like, well, and he says something to her because this is the first time he meets the child, and then he sees this weird creature growing out of his back that kind of looks like a Jack in the Box, but like,
yeah,
you'll like at the same time, and it's just wiggling around.
To be a clown.
Yeah, it is, but that's why it looks like Jack in the Box.
It's like an eel clown Jack in the Box thing. It's coming out of him like a Jack in the Box.
It's an alien version of the Jack in the Box mascot and Ronald McDonald, all kind of.
And it's like moving a lot, like it's underwater almost. It has very, like Pam said, eel-like watery movements.
And it grows bigger, and it like stretches towards. So they're standing across from the burger, which is apparently the only fast food restaurant that Russia has, even though there is an evil conglomerate of fast food chains trying to get all of their brands to work. The burger is the only one that works in Russia. And he's standing across.
It's the taste of freedom, Pam. It's the taste of freedom.
So there's this kid, and he's stretching like his little eel Jack in the Box / hamburger helper / Ronald McDonald creature is like reaching for the burger because it wants it, and it's growing bigger with how much it wants it, and looks like this weird cancerous mass on him. So clearly Misha freaks out, and he's like, oh my god, am I just going crazy from spending all my time with cows and having my cow wife for 6 years, and now I'm with this chick who tells me this is her kid, our kid, I guess. And he says something like, I know what's wrong with our kid. And Lily Sobieski goes, what's wrong with our kid? Like, what's wrong with him eating burgers all the time? What's wrong with him being severely overweight?
So, Even though he has type 2 diabetes, man.
She somehow is fit this entire time. Like, she's been living in Moscow, Russia, where everyone else is getting fat around her. But her image has never changed. Even though she had a baby, she somehow slimmed down again and has never felt pressure to put on weight, even though fat people are the new fabulous in this.
I think it would have been great if she showed up fat. Like, well, that's another missed opportunity. Like, maybe that was just the actor's vanity. I don't know. She's like, I won't be fat in this movie. I'm not sure if they maybe never thought of it, but
I bet
that's another
was.
Like missed opportunity. If she had showed up kind of obese and like she had a fat kid and was like, that would have been way more effective to reintroduce her character after a 6 year absence than just like, I look exactly the same as I did when the last I saw you, and now we have a fat kid together.
Yeah,
it doesn't
I
work
guarantee.
As well for me. Now that you mentioned, I really would like to. And I've seen that.
So I'm sure at some point there was a conversation about the director asking her to put on a bunch of weight for this role. And this is how we know that Lily Sobieski is not the dumbest C-list actor, because I'm sure she thought about, like, Jared Leto putting on 50 pounds for that terrible movie where he played the guy who shot Lennon. And she was just like, yeah, no.
Well, they were probably also like, what about a fat suit? And she's like, no fucking way.
Yeah, they were like, making Gwyneth Paltrow you. Don't you like Shallow Hal? Like,
no,
I'm not going to be a fat Helen Hunt. It's not going to happen.
No, she countered with that. She said, how about we get like a fat Betty Draper fat suit? And they said, where are we going to get the money for that? We have to create N64 characters coming out of people's heads.
and that's where this movie diverges. Hold on. That's where this movie diverges from Batman Begins. Because Christian Bale would have put on the weight.
That's true.
Well, yeah, we didn't have Christian Bale-like dedication from Lily Sobieski, unfortunately.
This is why she's never made it, clearly, because she doesn't have it. Also,
this is why she's not the Daniel Day-Lewis of Never Been Kissed.
Did you see that Joan of Arc movie she did? that's okay. Neither did anybody else.
Really? Did she get spoken to by a cow in the sky? Because I believe in the beginning of our movie, it says that Joan of Arc was hearing voices that made her change the world.
Oh,
much
man.
Like Mishka.
It's all tying together.
It's like a big loop. Like, we just closed the Lily Sobieski loop.
If we just close the loop.
I'll erase her from IMDb.
Yeah, if we close the loop and she doesn't exist, then you're welcome, audience.
This might be the last mention you ever hear.
But wait, then we wouldn't have Jungle to Jungle.
Yeah, we still would. It would just be Tim Allen and Mimi Siku the whole time. That's all you really need.
A young Claire Danes.
Oh, God.
In the alternate universe, everything Lily Sobieski has ever done is just automatically replaced with a young Claire Danes. Automatically. You know. It's just my so-called life era Claire Danes just is automatically inserted into Lily Sobieski's entire filmography and does a better job.
Dare to dream, guys. Dare to dream. He is like, oh, I see these weird, horrible, hideous creatures growing out of people. What's wrong with me? And he tries to hold his shit together, and he does a pretty impressive job considering the frightening things. He's seeing, like, these weird, tumorous things growing out of buildings that are all, like, gelatinous and kind of look like corporate figurehead. They're weird. And of course this has to come an hour and 40 minutes into this movie because they can only afford like 20 minutes worth of these special effects. So he sees them and he is holding his shit together because, you know, he can't tell Lily Sobieski about it because she already thinks he's a little bit crazy from living out in the sticks for a long time. And she is taking the kid out to go get some more burgers or something that the kid wants. And at this point, the kid is
hamburgers. They're like all over the house.
Yeah. And for some reason that, you know, now they don't really tell you how much time has passed because the kid is already calling him dad. And is like, oh, I love you, new dad that I just found out about. You're the greatest.
Lucky. And Lily Sobieski is lucky that she brought him back in this crazy fugue state where he bathes in the ashes of cows, because no rational man is going to say, yeah, that's my kid. Sure. See it 6 years later and you've got a little fatty with different hair than I do. Yeah. Okay. That's going to happen.
Yeah. So he also apparently for being born in Russia and raised in Russia, this kid is very, very, you know, very American. He does not have the slightest lick of an accent, which I guess they never explained, but whatever.
Which makes sense, because neither does Ed Stoppard.
That's true, except he does speak pretty fluent Russian when he has to.
True.
So she like takes the kid out of the apartment, and then Misha just flips his shit out and is like pulling burger things and like clearing tables, just like throwing everything on the floor, freaking out. And then she walks back into the apartment and she's like, oh my God, you're pretty much crazy and I can't handle this. I love this. She leaves like him a letter basically saying like, don't be here when I come back. I thought I could do this, but it's too hard. Like, just leave. I'm like, okay, you are the one who kidnapped him from his perfectly simple, happy life in the countryside of Russia.
Yeah.
Brought him here. And then you're like, this is too hard. You should probably find your way back out to your cow herding business.
She's like, this was a huge mistake.
Yeah. I was like,
I'll have to find somebody else to be my, you know, son's father.
Yeah.
I will
It's hard to find a different Forrest Gump to just bring into this relationship.
For this movie's credit, I will say that I did like the kind of world building they did when he returned, how it was kind of the Mike and Molly-fication of Russia, where they have like fat models and fat superheroes that the kid is into. I give the movie that. I like that it kind of set the world.
And I agree. Yeah. And that was one of the instances where the movie had an idea where it's like, what is admirable and, you know, within the realm of like attaining it and what is popular and desired only depends on the whims of a couple of dudes behind the scenes. And like you said, you know, 6 years goes by, like they don't make it seem like it takes place instantly, even though the protests were pretty severe, like we mentioned, and maybe a little uncalled for the fury of the Russian people. But, you know, like broad social change does take time. And to imagine 6 years, like that's reasonable for people to start to think like, okay, you know, I got a kid. It's like, be yourself. But the problem with that be yourself movement is that it does not include the thought of become better than yourself, which, like, everyone kind of needs a little bit of that. Like, none of us are perfect. Nobody. Nobody on this podcast, nobody listening to this podcast, nobody who may get an alert on their Facebook and just go right and scroll down and ignore this podcast. Nobody's super perfect. And this movie shows us that, like, if you don't strive to be super perfect, you're going to let yourself fall even worse than you could imagine. And that is like what happened to the country of Russia. You know, I say air quotes Russia in this movie because it's not literally, you know, where we're talking about. But as soon as they start to get the message that it's okay to be themselves, then it's like, well, we're okay to be ourselves no matter what we are. So why bother, right? Like, why move on and try to do better, right? It's like, let's just go eat, like, mad cheeseburgers.
This is where, I mean, I agree. Like,
it'll be okay because happy to be you, which is like an ad that they use right before this whole transformation of Russia that took 6 years. I'm sorry, Pam, what were you going
to
say?
I was just interesting because they had to focus the whole movie in Russia because they knew it would never make sense in our culture for all of a sudden, even with all these fast food restaurants, even with, like, our body weight, you know, like, our overweight epidemic and all of that stuff, it would never make sense that all of American culture would suddenly be like, no, this is what we all want to look like. We all want to be overweight now. But, and, like, to think that Russia would be so drastically different and ready to accept that so easily because of one TV show mishap is pretty ridiculous. I liked the universe they built, but also I guess it was like just a stretch of reality for me for, like, to even accept that
of really fickle idiots.
And it gets stretched even more, like, immediately now. Because his method of doing all the marketing magic that he does after this is, it initially relies on a bullshit coincidence, again.
Yeah, let's try to speed through this plot a little bit, because I don't want to talk about this movie as long as it actually was. I think we're going to have a lot to say. About the themes more so than the plot.
Yes.
So I'm gonna move this a little bit forward.
Gotcha. This is probably the only interesting section of the movie for me, I guess, but I'm not gonna go into it. I just wanted to quickly say that, like, this is also another weird part of the movie where it kind of seems like monopolies are Russia's big problem.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden so Misha's brilliant, his superpower is that he suddenly learns to teach companies to compete with each other, like, take out your competition or make them look really shitty and you're gonna do really well, and then all the companies start doing this.
Yeah.
Well, again, I think that this is that moment where Mishka kind of becomes the white-haired villain in a sense, because he is at his lowest, and what does he have going on for him professionally? Nothing. You know, Lily is kidnapped and brought him to the city. He has his cow herd is gone. He already sacrificed the cow, so it's like, what is he going to do? He has one business card in his pocket that's for a Chinese food joint that's a vegetarian joint. And he's like, well, there's no way you guys run. And this actually mirrors exactly the same conversation that our villain, Max von Sydow, has with his, you know, taco shell man and Wendy's man in the beginning, where he says, the Russian people don't want your product anymore. He says that in the very beginning about fast food. And now, right near the end of the movie, our guy says it about, you know, he says it about vegetarian food. This Chinese restaurant wants to be vegetarian, and he's like, there's no way you can be a successful restaurant in this environment. Everyone loves fat, everyone loves beef, everyone loves fast food, everyone loves being overweight, diabetic, everything else. It's that give in to that craving, because you're good the way you are. No matter how you are, you're good the way you are. And he goes, we're going to change that, basically. So now, like Chris had mentioned a bit before, we have our Batman Begins moment where he uses his power that he gained to influence marketing back to the healthy side, which directly deals with our man in fast food, even though they've never met each other. He says, we're going to make healthy cool. Well, how do we do that? Fat is fabulous, just like you said. How are we going to make healthy the new shit? So what he does is, and this is very interesting too, and I don't mean to go off on like five tangents, but in the beginning of the movie, Max von Sydow's character says that he's going to work about love, right? He brings up love. He's like, people don't love you anymore. We need to make them love you again. It's a very basic human emotion. So what does our protagonist come up with when it's his time at bat? He says, we're going to make these people fear death. What's as strong as love, as craving love, is fearing death, right? The yin-yang thing. That's the black side to this white side. So he's like, how can we incorporate the fear of death to your benefit? Well, we'll talk about Mayakao disease. So what do? First thing he does, he comes out with an ad that shows an attractive, overweight female, but, you know, very pretty and smiley, and she's in love with who? The guy who's bringing her fast food, who's kind of a lunk, and he's got a little goatee or whatever. And then what does she do? Eat the fast food, get sickness, and in the same commercial, it talks about her dying from Mayakao disease. So what do? You take the ideal of beauty that this culture already has over the last 6 years, that overweight is sexy. You show them dying. She died because she ate a burger.
I liked the part of the movie where all of a sudden he's like, oh, hey, there's all of these giant monopolies in Russia. You know what I'm going to do is make competition for all of them so they even each other out. And it's like a checks and balance system of companies in Russia. So no one's all fat and no one's all skinny and everyone can choose and yay, freedom. And the way this is portrayed in the movie, which when they marketed this movie, because I remember previews for it, and I was like, oh, that looks kind of cool. And this is like the segment of the movie they showed, because they didn't want to show you all the rest of what's going to happen around this,
is that basically
by making these brands that can fight for themselves, by making the vegetarian restaurant that can compete against the mad cow disease, and by making, you know, all of this, like, suddenly opening up the market in Russia, he makes these, like, only these monsters that only he can see. So he makes like this cool dragon vegetarian creature, like this cool dragon tree creature that's like, fuck you, the burger, I'm gonna kick your ass. And then like their version of Apple gets destroyed by a different computer company. And I don't know, that was like the only enjoyable part of the movie for me, really, was when all like the little monsters were fighting each other.
Yeah, the Chinese restaurant birthed a dragon, because what would a movie we do be without some casual racism? And it goes and kills the burger clown. A bunch of fighting. There's a Coke praying mantis that leaps at the viewer, which I think is actually some pretty clever subtextual commentary. And then all of a sudden we cut back to Max von Sydow, and he's talking with his nameless mooks, and he gets struck by lightning and vaporized, and that's just the end of the bad guy.
Because that's how lightning works.
Pretty much disappears literally.
Well, when lightning strikes the good guy, it like saves his life, and it makes him like, you know, this marketing superhero.
I was trying to figure out if there was some part of the movie I missed that, like, Misha was like, fuck you, dude, and threw his lightning bolt out into the universe and managed to hit this guy.
Neither of them are ever even aware that the other person exists.
Well, then I wondered if it was, like, a transfer of power from the universe. He was like, I gave you this great gift, old Max, and now you ruined it. Use it wisely, so I'm giving it to Misha, and I'm taking it off.
I like that.
Zeus is secretly the secret patron god of marketing.
Secretly the only deity.
Well, it's a big old cowhead in the star.
The very last scene of the movie, we find out that the cow in the stars has been the narrator the whole time.
Are we saying
the cow is God?
Yeah, Zeus. Okay, if we want to go with the whole Zeus theory, that this movie is, in fact, really the Greeks saying, like, hey, we had it right all along.
I think
Zeus
we're giving this movie way too much credit.
I think the cow was supposed to be, like, a golden calf kind of metaphor.
At the same time, but the Greeks used to, I mean, Zeus did used to appear as a bull in a lot of, like, old myths. And he, I mean, the sacrifice of the red cow and stuff dates back to, like, you know, to that era.
That's a biblical thing, though. That's a funny thing. There's a scene where he's shown researching this, and there's narration of this cow god talking about, like, essentially itself. It's like, by the way, this is all the stuff that he's reading about right now. It's kind of about me, but you're not going to find this out until the last frame.
We don't know it's the cow god at this point. I mean, that was like the big Shyamalan twist that they saved for the very end. Because, like, as we were mentioning before, after we're an hour into this movie, I start to wonder, like, who the hell is this narrator? They're talking crazy. You know, they're talking all whimsical and fairy tale. And it's like, what is the point of all this? And it's because that Star Cow was narrating this guy's life ever since he got struck by lightning as a youth in 1980s Soviet Russia.
Yeah. Star Cow, by the way, is Star Fox's really shitty cousin.
Yeah, and did you guys, there needed to be a deleted scene where, like, the Star Cow is what gives him the inspiration for the slogan, Red Bull gives you wings.
I really wanted to see, like, him and Star Cow talking on, like, a Simba Mufasa relationship.
I like that Star Cow is now part of the podcast. Like, it's just, we're like, yeah, Star Cow exists. Everyone just get over it. Star Cow's real. We're going to make
Cow is real. The movie was all Star Cow. It was always about Star Cow.
If we ever make merchandise, can we have a shirt that just says, you know, Church of Star Cow or something like that? Because I would be a member of it.
Oh, man, we got to get on like that, like a print mission. Oh, Church of Star Cow.
Hashtag Star Cow.
Star Cow will show you the way. If only if you're struck by lightning. You have to get hit by lightning. If you disappear, you are obviously a bad guy. If you get magical marketing skills, you're obviously a good guy.
Okay. That's the first three things that we're ever going to sell as merchandise. Star Cow t-shirts, 60B t-shirts, and Jeffrey Tambor is Spanky t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be the new Jonestown. All of our members are going to like show up and try to get hit by lightning at once, and then everyone's going to die, and it's going to go down in notoriety. The church
well, just don't
started.
Do it without me. I want to get on the good side of Star Cow.
Led by these four terrible human beings who led all of these people to their death.
I'm curious to ask all of you, but I'll start quickly with where I thought it was going to end. The first time we see these magical thought dragons hatch out of the restaurant of the Chinese egg that's on top of the restaurant, and the dragon literally eats the Ronald McDonald thought. It's very literal, and his marketing genius goes on to create more monstrous thoughts. But there was a part, and someone mentioned this, where these Coca-Cola dragons like fly at the screen, and I thought for sure that was it. I thought for sure it was over.
Yeah, I thought it was like the free market. Yeah,
yeah, he's the man now. Like, his ideas are better than the ideas that he was working for. And it's very literal because his ideas are literally eating and killing all the other ideas. It's like getting hit in the head with a stick. You can't miss it.
He's created a monster.
He created a monster because nobody wants to be Marshall no more. They want Shady. He's Chopper.
Oh my God. That was
beautiful. Where do you think that you thought the movie was going to end before it? Because that was it for me.
Okay, no, there were plenty of parts where I thought this movie was going to end, but like what Chris was saying before, you know, the beginning of the beginning of this movie is very like anti-American in a lot of ways, but then the end of this movie kind of gets more like, oh, now you have the free market and you have competition and you have all of these things, like we're embracing American values again. And I was like, is this where it's going to end? Because it seemed a lot like that was it. Like, this is, he's defeated the monster by making choice. And now people don't have this one ruling monster. They can choose many different desires. And they don't have one thing that makes them any one way or the other. But it didn't end there, no. Which was...
No.
I was also wondering if that was going to backfire on him again. Because did anyone else get like a 28 Days Later vibe from the end of the movie? Where like the girl is walking out into like this empty Moscow street. And there's just nothing around.
That was the exact thing I thought of. I was like, is this 28 Days Later? But
the fast food zombies are going to be after her.
Let's start to
I don't think we touched on this, but the way the movie ends is that advertising is now illegal down to the name of your car. Like, they're burning hood ornaments, they're burning, you can't even have if you go to a burger joint, you can't even have your takeout container say, you know, Burger World or whatever. Like, all advertising becomes illegal, which is like to the fury again, the fury of the Russian people. And
no, before it's before we get to that part, because this is another, like what Chris was talking about before, this very like skewed vision of how much the public gives a shit about anything is they're talking about, because all of a sudden now that all of the brands are competing with each other, they're getting really harsh and they're saying like, oh, if you drink this, you're going to have bladder leakage, or I hope you like diapers on your kids because they're going to cause them to be sterile later in life.
Yeah. That was my favorite.
All these horrible commercials just basically like tearing the shit out of everything else. And all of a sudden the Russian people, I mean, the Russians are very peaceful, loving, understanding people. So they don't understand all of this sudden, like, aggressiveness in their marketing campaigns. So what they do to counteract all this aggressive marketing is that they turn into this really angry mob that breaks into Misha's office building and basically, like, is ready to... These people are ready to kill Abby, which is Lily Sobieski. They're ready to, like, beat her over the head and, like, rape her in the office. And they're, like, they beat down Misha, like, bludgeon him to the ground. And you think he's dead. And I was like, wow. And then all of a sudden, just then... on the newscast, they're like, oh, the Russian president has decided that they're going to ban all advertising. And then all of the Russian people together go, okay, well, we're done here. And they were saved by
the funniest, part about that scene, is it's not even the telecast that saves them. It's like there's a TV on this room. There's literally one rioter who shoots a gun into the air and is like, guys, I'm on the phone. And somebody just told me that it's okay. We can go home now.
I don't think that people at home can understand how out of place and weird this is. This is just two people in an office, and then a mob breaks in and straight up murders 7 or 8 people. This is like the scene from Anchorman where Steve Carell throws a trident into somebody, played for no laughs whatsoever, played completely straight face.
So this is a whole different kind of escalation. Had been there because that would have been awesome.
So serious.
Not to mention that this is one of those like nouveau style offices. So the entire thing is like just glass windows everywhere. So there's glass shattering.
That was my favorite. He tells Lily Sobieski to get into a room and like blockade herself in when it's just a giant glass off. I was like, oh, don't well,
she,
think
she knows it's
save her.
It's not the only time she's been inside a glass house.
This whole podcast is basically us talking about Star Cow and then other Lily Sobieski movies. I hope everyone is aware of that because it's all we've done so far.
I hope you're happy at the suffering we've put ourselves through.
I'm just happy you brought that up, Dee. I'm just happy you said that.
It's just,
I actually kind of hate myself for making that joke.
You know, I guess during the movie, I thought about the fact that this seemed like a really big overreaction from the entire Russian people to be like, we're just going to fucking murder
Ready for murder.
Yeah, we're just gonna blow up everything, just beat you in the head. We're gonna put bricks in pillowcases and come in and smash you on the head.
It's like women in communist, capitalist Russia, they know who their ad executives are. They know they're coming to get you.
Like Chris was saying, it's a very contradictory message because the reason they're rioting is because of all the fear-based marketing. They're like, oh, we don't like all of these brands telling us that these bad things are going to happen.
Right.
So what do? We turn into a murderous mob of people and then just bludgeon other human beings. Because
it's
just
amazing that once again, they know exactly who is responsible for this. It's as if they know him personally. They're like, oh, Mishka, God damn it. You did it again. We're going to kill you. Again, we're going to come after you on a personal attack for the second time.
Okay.
Like,
this also
again,
does
marketing work. Superhero. He's a marketing celebrity. This is what you can get with a degree in marketing is what this movie is trying to tell you. You can be the champion or the villain of an entire European nation.
This marks the second time, though, in this movie that I was like, okay, it has to be over now, right? It's done. Like, we're over. He's dead. And Russia is just like, fuck advertising. And that was the message of this movie. No, it's not quite over yet.
Well, yeah, the last scene of the movie, he wakes up in the hospital. We find out he is not dead. Advertising has been banned, which, I mean, as Pam said, this movie can never be set in America for several reasons. And this is one of them. Just the complete banning of marketing and advertising is, I feel like there would be Supreme Court lawsuits and a ton of constitutional blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we find out Misha's not dead. And we also find out that the girl who went into a coma has woken up from her coma and is beautiful and thin thanks to
emaciation
for 10 years. Yeah, being fed through a tube.
Atrophy. It's called atrophy.
Also, she has the fastest coma recovery of anyone I've ever seen who's been in a 10-year coma.
Yeah, she just gets up. No wiggle your big toe. She's just like, fuck this. I'm done.
They spend a lot of time massaging her calves, making those muscles okay. So.
Well, then I guess they kind of just trust her to take care of herself because nobody stops her on her way out of the building.
which
out of
this
Russian hospital.
And that's another thing. I don't understand what the movie is trying to say here, where the movie victimized her for trying to make her thin against her will, right? It victimized her and vilified Misha and Lily Sobieski. But now, the last scene of the movie, we see her beautiful, thin, walking out into this brave new world where it's really, quite literally in some cases, when you see the billboards, a blank slate for her, for the world. She's beautiful. She's happy. The world, just like the world is. Like, what is this saying now?
I think it's saying that it's going to happen again. Like, here's the thing. Think about, and there's a scene where they're talking to, like, a doctor, and he's like, well, she could be out 10 minutes or 10 months or 10 years. Like, and they're talking to him on the news, and he's, like, the expert. And so this woman really actually, as it turns out, is out for about a decade. But if she had just woken up in 10 minutes, the movie would have not taken, and the society of this fake Russia would not have taken this whole side mission to self-discovery and mob violence. If she had woken up in 10 minutes, it would have been a cover-up. She would have been great. She would have been a celebrity. They were going to make this girl into a star. And actually, when our main character sees her, and he's looking at lots of audition tapes for lots of overweight Russian women, and the only thing he says when he looks at her tape is, she can be a star. She can be a star. So she becomes a star in the wrong way, but when she wakes up, it's like it could potentially happen all over again. You never know when she walks out. Like, what are they trying to say?
You're trying to say that she's the martyr of this film. She's our Joan of Arc of this film.
Yes, kind of is, I think, because she didn't mean to be in a coma for 10 years. Like, that's the only reason I think they have that doctor say that is because, oh, well, it could be 10 minutes. And if it was 10 minutes, it would have been great for all of our characters involved. Or it could be 10 weeks or 10 years. And as it turns out, it was closer or even over a decade. But when she wakes up, first of all, it's crazy that she's allowed to walk out of the hospital by herself. That's the one thing I kept on thinking is that she's still in her gown and she's walking around like a zombie and she doesn't even know where she's at. But she's skinny and she's good looking and all the surgeries are still there. So she has the potential to do anything. Like when she gets out there, she could live a quiet life or she could rally against the evils of what was done to her and reality TV, and like she could rally against the evil of wanting to be thin and this whole terrible, you know, networking world. Or she could say, look how good I look. Here's what did it to me, and it can do it for you. And it can bring back that whole dark age, you know, dark age of this communist Russia where everything is.
But I mean, like, I agree with Chris, though, in the fact that, like, I understand what you're saying, but that's your interpretation of this movie, and I don't think the movie sets you up to think any of those things. I think you are just a very good interpreter of what this message could possibly be. And
well, then what do you think they want when she just walks in?
I don't know, because they don't make it clear. They don't, like Chris said, they don't make it clear if she's the victim, if she's supposed to be unhappy that she's thin, if she's supposed to be like, I should have never changed. Oh, wait, yeah, I went into a coma, but now I'm thin and beautiful still, and life is great. Is that the point of this movie, or was the point that we, you know, victimize fat people, or that we don't victimize fat people, or what? Like, I guess the message gets really convoluted in what they want you to think or feel about any one thing. And and it was weird too that, like, all of a sudden, now that advertising has been banned, all of, like, because every time you've seen Russia up to this point, like, every street has been filled with cars. Everyone's moving around everywhere all the time. And that was why it felt so 28 days later when this chick just, like, gets up, walks out of her hospital bed and goes into the street. And there's basically two cars out there. Like, what happened to all of Russia?
Russia's abandoned.
Yeah.
People are like, fuck this. We need advertising somewhere. We can't stay here. And they all left.
Well, the movie is a toothless satire. It needed to make some kind of statement at the end. Where I thought it was going was that everything now had to be like brand X. Like, there was only going to be cereal. There wouldn't be Frosted Flakes or
right,
Apple
yeah.
Games. Or
you
there
go
wouldn't
eat
be
cereal.
BMWs.
You go and
yeah, you get cars.
You go eat a hamburger. Like, there's only one hamburger. There's right. one car. There's one cereal.
Yeah, it needed to do that, or it needed to do like the Twilight Zone ending, where she wakes up. And she thinks she's beautiful, but all these fat people think she's hideous.
Oh, that would have been awesome. Well,
But that would have happened, though, if she had woken up 2 years earlier when all of the brands were like, and everyone was fat. Like, that was
so, again, that's another missed opportunity of this movie. Like, this movie is full of so many missed opportunities because what you guys just mentioned, I never thought of. And I can tell you right now, it would have made for a better movie to have that ideal, you know, manifest itself on screen where she wakes up and she's gross now. The whole ordeal she went through was for nothing, but it's because of her. Could you imagine? It's because of what she went through that she's gross.
Well, like, that's what I'm saying. Terrible. She's the real kind of star. She's the real reason why any of those things happened in the first place, and she's such a minor part of it. Yeah. They're like, oh, you're kind of the catalyst for everything. We decided you were going to be it. Now you wake up and you're just like, I'm alone out here and look at this world around me.
Yep.
Actually, and I wanted to go back to missed opportunities for this film, because when I remember seeing the previews for it, I was like, oh, so this is going to be like that Simpsons episode where all of the neon signs come to life, right? It's going to be just like that, and it's going to be great. No, it was nothing like that. And I feel like that was the missed opportunity here, that it could have been as good as that episode. And if you've never seen it, you should.
In the,
there's
in the
so many of them. Anybody else have missed opportunities?
Well, I think in general, in the hands of a gifted screenwriter or even a competent screenwriter who knows how to string a plot together over three acts, this is an interesting satire, like a Verhoeven or something like that. This would have been a really cool movie. Instead, it seems like it was put together by like a 14-year-old kid who scribbles anarchy symbols on his desk in class. It didn't have anything to actually say, but it had this really deep idea. It just couldn't put it into words. And I think that kind of brings us to our Netflix or Notflix. And I'm going to say, well, you know what? You guys go first. What do you think?
Don't watch this movie. If there was a single missed opportunity in this, it was the fact that they made this movie. They probably could have saved themselves $17 million and however much money, however much time they wasted on putting this movie together.
Was that the budget?
Doing all the CGI for it. We're not actually sure. We haven't been able to find information on the budget, but there's no way that they made this movie for less than $20 million. And it only brought in about three.
I feel like I need to find out about the budget just because of the fact that all of these brands were like, obviously someone in the writing department thought they were super clever to come up with a name like Yapple or like Giant Soft or whatever it was called. Yeah. And all these like fake brands that are supposed to be Apple, Microsoft, Google. You know, when you was on that computer and it was Oogle, like someone thought they were real slick with that. And I think they had to save the budget for all the bad CGI. So I kind of agree with you, D.
So I want to start out by my review of this by reading a review off of IMDb, like I said I was going to do before. This is from Jack Hoff. He posted this 6 November 2012. And it's
really? Jack Hoff?
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Really?
Yes. I bet that guy found Yapple really clever.
Wait, like, I want to read. I want to read.
Let
me read this to you. Okay, so I'm going to give you two viewpoints. My viewpoint is not this man's viewpoint, but I'm going to read this to you anyway. Seems that a lot of people are threatened by simple truths in this film. Fat people don't want to be told that their food choices are being influenced by advertising. The negative ratings come from the mirror held in front of the faces of the audience. The negativity is a reflection of the shame of being overweight or the reflection of their own brands that they're wearing and the value they put in them. This is an original film that doesn't fit the current Hollywood blockbuster mold, but rather it requires self-examination of what influences human choices. There are a lot of word salad reviews on this movie already. No need for another. Go in with no expectations. Come out with a cleaner view of the world and start to understand why you're craving your McDonald's/Coke/iDevice. Check it out and be pleasantly rewarded unless your own reflections reflect something too unpleasant to accept. So that is how this man interpreted the movie. And you know what? Maybe I could see that. But at the same time, fuck that guy, because I would say Notflix, because, you know, like I said before, I was really expecting it to be something like the Treehouse of Horror episodes from The Simpsons, with the attack of the 50-foot eyesores, which I would totally recommend you watch instead, because you get to watch the Pep Boys walk around with their heads too heavy to hold up, and then they're dragging them on the ground, which is way funnier than anything you'll ever see in this movie. It's just like 2 hours of really convoluted messages, yes, we all know that we're run by some of our devices. I don't think any of you would be surprised if you said, yeah, I'm dependent on my phone, or yeah, I'm dependent on Facebook. Everybody knows it. No one gives a shit. They're not going to change themselves. And if they were going to, they don't need a movie to fucking tell them to do it. So screw this movie. I would say Netflix.
Nice.
I would have to agree. This 90% of this movie was a boring, confused mess. And I can't, like, there were maybe 10% of this movie where I wasn't just shut the movie off. Can we stop watching this? So there were at least three times during the course of Chris and I watching this that I asked if we could just turn the movie off and just do something, like try something else, try a different movie. I hated this movie.
Yeah.
Rob, did you dissent yet?
I kind of do. And the only reason is I really like what both of you have said. I think there's a really strong opinion that is well-founded coming from both what Pam and Dee had just said. However, in my opinion, I take what you had said and I do agree, but I would call this a Netflix and I would say, you know, it's worth getting into just because of the fact that, like, I just don't think a movie that can make me still think about its ideas is that bad. Yes, the execution was poor. I think that we've really hit on that. But just the ideas were so good. And it's like, if this was back to a conversation between a group of friends sitting in a circle, I think it would have been very captivating. Talking about, well, what if, you know, the desires of people were seen coming out of the back of their heads as brands? That's a great idea. Like, that's a crazy idea. And, like, what if everything you wanted was controlled by people who were trying to make money? That's a cool idea. But where the movie falters is in the script. It's in the framing. You know, talk about we need to have this narrator who turns out to be the star cow, which was infuriating to me, even though I might be the only one who defends this movie. I don't think it is the worst movie we've watched. I would rather watch this movie again than have to watch that Silent Hill piece of crap we never even did a podcast for. This was at least something that would get my mind moving, even though it was not an entertaining movie. Let me just put it to you that way. It was not entertaining. It's no Iron Man 3. Like, it's not fun. This movie's not entertaining. There's no action. It's really talky. I tried my hardest to pay attention, and it lost me, but it doesn't really matter because it has jack shit to do with the plot, talking about the history lesson of goddamn Soviet Russia and marketing as a whole. But I think that the idea – this could never have been a great movie. Like, those are ideas that you're like, man, that would be crazy, and then you forget about them. But whoever wrote this script and directed this movie were like, yeah, that would be crazy. Let's call Lily Sobieski up and Jeffrey Tambor and see if they want to do this. And that's where I think the movie crossed the line. The ideas are great. You know, the tenets behind this movie might have been a really interesting essay, but when you got bad CGI and bad character development, the only thing you have left to look at is some motherfucking crazy person sacrificing a red cow. And you know, I will hold on to that for the rest of my days.
I'm going to say Netflix this movie.
Yeah! That's and what here's I'm talking why. About.
I don't even know you people. Unless you're really, really into Ooh. Cow murder, don't watch this movie.
But Chris, elaborate on your decision to join me on the Netflix side.
I will. And it's because early on in the episode, Pam brought up Elizabethtown. Episode 3. If you haven't listened to it, go check that one out.
Do it now!
And in that movie, Orlando Bloom says, there's a difference between failures and fiascos. A failure is the absence of success. Anyone can fail. But a fiasco is a disaster of epic proportions.
The real fiasco is that you could quote that so perfectly.
I may have it up on IMDb right now.
That is the problem with this. Is that you just
succinct, dude.
I may or may not.
You have that written down for a while.
I may or may not have it on IMDb in front of me. But
you may or may not have memorized it the second we watch Elizabethtown. I'm just saying.
But
it was great. It was great. I love it. So
every movie we have done so far has been a failure. This film is a fucking mess. This is the best possible definition of a fiasco that we have done so far. And it is a bad movie. It is poorly written. It is poorly acted. It is poorly shot. It needs to be seen because everything we've said is just scratching the surface. There is a lot of layers. Yes, this is a horrible-smelling, rotten onion, but you could still peel back those layers. If you watch this with someone else, you will be discussing the themes, and you will be discussing what the fuck you just watched. And I think that is more important to a film than anything we've seen in Dracula 3000 or Teaching Mrs. Tingle.
Yes, I can't agree with you more, especially because I watched this film with a friend, and it's all, I watched Double Dragon with my wife, and I've watched all the rest of them. And we're talking Double Dragon was March, right? We're pushing mid-September. I've watched them all alone and had to stew on my opinions. And this was only the second movie where I was able to live it with another person that I appreciate their company. And I mean, not that I don't love you guys, but I don't watch movies with y'all. I just talk about them. It wasn't a gold medal. It was like a bronze medal.
I think it was more of a participation ribbon at field day, but whatever.
This is my 10% of my Netflix vote also goes to the fact that if you want to join the Church of Star Cow, you have to sit through this entire movie. That's our prerequisite. It's basically like our Bible.
Yes.
So if you want to join Star Cow Church, please watch it.
Star Cow will guide us through all of our future assessments of film.
Does that make people who legitimately liked Elizabeth Town our version of Satanists?
No, it makes them our version of death obsessed. Basically, because we decided what? It was like she was obsessed with death. So basically the goth kids are the people who like Elizabeth Town.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what we have decided. I think we should end this podcast, by the way, with just naming Lily Sobieski movies, because we pretty much just named most of them.
Guys. I just found 1 degree of separation between Elizabeth Town and Lulu Sobieski.
Uh-oh.
Nice. What is...
She was a final candidate for the role of Claudia in Interview with the Vampire, which she eventually lost out to Kirsten Dunst.
That bitch. We could have been watching Lulu Sobieski. We could have been watching Lulu Sobieski and Elizabeth Town.
And we could have been watching Kirsten Dunst and Branded.
We could have just been the Lulu Sobieski martyrs at this point. We could have just been watching Lulu Sobieski movies and ripping into them.
I guess it's time to say goodbye. We're back. It does. You're right. It does feel good to be back.
It does. It's hey, Netflix martyrs, man. We never really been gone. We just been in hibernation mode. You know, the summer's crazy. You know, it was too hot to do a podcast. It was like 110 degrees, man. Like, what do you want? Here we are. It's September, baby. Here we are returning once again. Like, don't call it a comeback.
Straight and if you're content. And if you're a loyal listener, you've already seen the Aeon Flux episode and know why we went on summer break in the first place.
Next week, we'll be watching Cyber Seduction, His Secret Life, which can be found on a website that rhymes with boob-foob.
It's OOTube, just like yes, Google Brandon.
Rootube.
No, hold on. There actually is a YouTube XP in this movie. I think it's called Zootube.
Rootube.
Rootube.
Oh, yeah. Zootube. Kootube. Bootube. Dootube. It doesn't matter.
You just got to change
the first letter. Right. Newtube. Mootube. YouTube. Oh, no, wait. U and Y is the same thing in this. A-E-I-O-U and sometimes.
And with that, we're done.
And we just keep going through the letters so we actually hit what we're trying not to say. Perfect.
It's sometimes Y. Good night, everybody.
All right. See you guys next time. Hail Star Cow.